This is the Serrano Brothers Podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Serrano Brothers Podcast. We have today the Reverend Holly McHale joining us, and so I've been having these thoughts, right, about like the nature of pastoral ministry and like the relationship between pastor and congregation and this kind of like flood of anxiety that is happening with our society becoming more secular, the church shrinking. And I just wanted to like talk it out. This isn't happening in my congregation. I have a lovely congregation, but what I notice with colleagues and other pastors who talk online is because the church is shrinking, there's a lot of like anxiety going on in the congregation. And sometimes that anxiety gets focused towards the pastor and the pastor being the root of all the problems that the congregation is happening, when really it's maybe probably most likely just the tidal wave of what the church is experiencing. And so like the things that I kind of wanted to talk about is that one, but like, what's the nature between the pastor and the council, you know, and what is say like a mutual ministry committee. And if you guys use those and how that works out, and I don't know, that just kind of where my head's at. How do you guys feel about talking about this?
Yeah, let's talk about it.
I'm really, you just invited me in. Here I am.
Yeah. Holly's only here because we were texting just as we were about to start filming. And we're like, hey, Holly, you want to come on? And she was like, sure, I'll come on.
Emailing other people, but great, let's do it.
So I noticed, you know, I'm now at Good Shepherd and St. John's. And there is a generalized anxiety about the state of the church. And I think it's because people care so deeply about their congregation, their church, that they want their place to survive. And my heart really goes out to those people because they've been here for decades, right? This has been their worshiping congregations. At the same time, I think that as pastors, we are called to give them a broader vision of the church than the localized church, and helping them see that the kingdom of God is at work in bigger ways than just our community. And that our community closing is not a failure of the church. Do you get any kind of, how's your congregation, Holly? Do they have that kind of generalized anxiety?
I mean, I think that all congregations have a little bit. I know that I have it, especially in the congregation I served before, there was a lot of anxiety about it. And so I think sometimes I'm like, what I bring, like that's more me than the congregation, or having to remember if it's a lower Sunday, like, oh, we're in summer. Like there are reasons for, it's not that the, my own issue, but the congregation, I try to let them know about what's going on, or the council at least, in the wider church and also in the congregations around us. That's where we see it, wondering how we can partner and knowing that's touchy.
Right. Partnering with other congregations can be touchy, right? Yeah. Especially if the congregations, I know in the place I'm serving now, there has been kind of swapping between members over the last 25, you know, years. And sometimes people left this one to go to the other one, that other one to come here. That is just kind of what's happened back and forth, you know?
Lay of the land. Yeah. So right. Like,
I thought that was going to happen to me when I went over to St. John's and worked at Good Shepherd. And I had about three families over at St. John's come to me and tell me, when we were kids, we used to all go to Good Shepherd, and then we are now at St. John's. And they've all been positive. They've been like, but we love Good Shepherd. My mom got married there. Like, yeah. And so it was a very positive thing. And so I think time, at least, might have healed some of those discontentments as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that through the tunnel with being at Our Savior's, and there was back and forth with Holy Shepherd.
Right.
And now I think that's like back to the early 2000s or before, they have an intern that they are quasi kind of sharing, but it took at least 20 years or Josh, remember when you and I would do youth trips together, people would, I don't know if they said it to you, but they would say it to me like, oh, I'm so glad that we're doing something with Holy Shepherd.
Yeah.
It's like, of course, they're just right there.
Right, yeah.
And I think collaborative ministry is the way of the future. There was a guy in San Diego when I was doing youth ministry. Do you remember his name, Josh? And he was always getting people together.
Was his name Ron?
No, it wasn't Ron. Anyways, but he would get people together, and he always said that collaborative ministry is the future 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And so we would do big things together as churches and even share confirmation and all that kind of stuff 20 years ago. And it was working out really well. I think it's the only way we're going into the future, especially for small congregations.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think people in congregations, they see their shrinking numbers and that anxiety that they have, right? It's like, oh, if we're going to do, you know, sometimes collaborative ministry, it's like, well, as long as it happens here, you know?
Yeah.
You know, as long as, you know, and so I know in some of my members, a real hesitation to go to other churches, right? They're like, you can do collaborative ministry, I'm just not going to go, you know?
I've like, literally had people say that to me, Josh.
You know?
Yeah.
And so it's like, well, you know, I'm sorry for that, but, you know, we got to figure out the way of the future. And in my mind, especially in here, I'm like, what is ministry going to look like in 20 years from now in this area? Not 5 years from now, you know? Mm-hmm. And so we got to start preparing for that future, not for just like, hey, are we going to meet our budget this year? You know, I decided this year, I'm not doing Holy Week alone anymore. I'm going to do collaborative Holy Week from now on because I get 5 to 7 people to show up during Holy Week. And it's like, I'd rather do it somewhere else and have 25 people than 5. You know?
And those 5 to 7 are the ones who are willing to go to other churches.
Exactly. Quite
possibly, yeah. So
on the collaborative thing, and this is really, it started off with pastors, but it's been lay-led, where it's the churches in Oakland that are right. I mean, there's some interesting conversations about where they are, but they're like within a mile, but above the 580. I think like I have to say that. But they're not Lutheran. And so the pastors, we started getting together shortly after COVID, just like to hang out kind of, and that's sort of there. But then in the last 2 years, and then we did a Lenten thing together. And then each of us brought forward 2 parishioners because the parishioners kept going, oh, we want to do more. And the Catholic priest is like, well, we don't have the time for that as pastors. So you guys do something. And so the lay people, they are leading it. And it's still early stages, but they meet every month. And it's like, okay, if you've got a cancer support group, great, we're going to send your people there. Uh-huh. Hold on, I've got a teenager coming in.
Friends, this is the life of a pastor with children.
How long do you think it's been in the oven? No idea.
I'm leaving this in, by the way, Holly. I'm totally leaving this in.
Holly, do you remember when we used to go to, like, we used to do these youth trips together, and people would walk in and they'd be like the kids would come up to us and go, hey, where's the bathroom? And we would just be like, we've never been here
never
before.
Never been here.
So why don't you go find it?
I do that now with my own kids. I'm like, nope. So thank you, Josh, for that. But this is what I wonder. And so this is it. Like, it's not perfect, and I don't know where it's going to go. And it's lay-led. So, like, that's unfortunate for me, like, strong people. But I think it helps, or at least in my context, especially in my context, it helps that it's not Lutheran because my people can be like, we're going over to the Catholic church for a Bible study. They're like, but we're not going to become Catholic. So, you know, like, you don't have to worry that the poaching thing, which is not there, but we all know that sensitivity.
There is an underlying worry, I think, for people. It's like, well, what if they like it more over there?
Yeah.
I think I'm with you guys that the collaborative ministries is the future. But I kind of want to come back to like this anxiety in our own congregations or people feeling inside of the congregations. Part of this is like sometimes the council, like church councils, will feel like
there's something wrong.
there's something wrong with the pastor, right?
No, that there's something wrong in general. And when they start looking for what's wrong, I think they go through all of, is it our ministries? Are we doing enough? Is it our property? Are we welcoming? You know, all this kind of stuff. But then it ends up landing on the pastor.
Yeah.
We're the focal point on Sunday and all that. Yeah. But right. Totally. Yeah.
And I've seen this with colleagues. You know, I haven't had this happen with me, but I've definitely seen it, you know. And then they'll want to do things like councils. I've heard, you know, that councils want to do things like start evaluating the pastor. Do you have evaluations, Holly?
No. But we are like, hopefully, great, love it. Some people watch this. We're loosey-goosey on administrative stuff. But at the last congregation I saw served, there were these feelings about the other pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember every 2 years we would get from the council, they wanted us to document all our time.
Oh.
Now, I should probably, okay, anyways, we're on a podcast. I just... like loosely did it and like, okay, well, if they really want this,
yeah.
I'd like to think that they never asked for it back. And not that I was like purposely, like, well, I'm going to do this until they asked for it back. It was more like I forgot about it because they never asked for it back. But every 2 years, and I knew that was their anxiety.
For me, that's a total red flag, Holly. Once a congregation says, we want you to account for your time, that tells me that there is some unhappiness and distrust that the pastor is actually doing their pastoral duties. Mm. And so they want to see it.
Right.
I also hear that the pastor isn't in their office as a part of that whole anxiety and a mistrust of the pastor.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something when I got to Good Shepherd that they were like, okay, we need to know what your officer hours are going to be. And I said, okay, I mean, I don't really have office hours. I mainly work 9 to 5, you know, Monday through, I think back then it was Monday through Thursday or Tuesday through Friday, I forget. And if I'm not in my office, then I'm out doing something ministry related. Mm-hmm. And I think what happened here is over time, they saw me in the office enough, which they didn't do with the previous pastor, because that pastor also lived like on the peninsula, like on the North Peninsula. So that pastor was super far away. And so they were like, we never see the pastor. And so I tried to stay in the office as much as I could. So people saw me around. And then that tape kind of just died out.
Mm-hmm.
By just being available to the congregation, showing my face, coming to Bible studies, coming to, you know, all of these things and just being available. It took years. It took 5 years for that tape to die. But it was because there was anxiety that the pastor, like that I wouldn't be doing my job if I wasn't here in the office. And from my youth ministry days that I tell people is, if you see me in my office too much, I'm actually not doing my job.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Because I'm supposed to be out there.
Right.
In the community, yeah, with other churches, reaching people who aren't a part of the church. Like that's part of my job too.
Yeah, I really don't buy the belief that you being in your office equals you working. Like just like there's that idea that you need to have this perception of you being in your office and available. It's like we got cell phones and email, friend, and texting. You want to get a hold of me, you can totally get a hold of me. You know, I am available almost 24 hours a day through my phone. You know, like you can't be any more available than that.
And you can't have both, right, Josh? Like,
yeah,
like you can't have where it's like, well, the pastor's never in an office, but that they're talking to you at 8 or 9 o'clock at night through text message, you know?
Right.
It's like, choose one or the other. Either the pastor's not available because they're not in the office, or they are available because they're talking to you late at night.
And I think all of this comes down to like trust, right?
Indeed.
I think so too.
Like, does your congregation trust the pastor and the ministry that they're doing, right? And if they don't, what are the lines of communication to talk about those things, right? And so sometimes those lines of communication are the council, right?
Mutual ministry?
Or mutual ministry, right? But it seems to me that there is a perception, and I want to talk to you about what this is you know, there's a perception among sometimes church councils that they are the pastor's boss, right? I don't know. Have you ever had that, Holly, or Jeremy?
I've had that at, I remember learning in seminary when I learned about how the ELCA was formed. This is on our Lutheran year. Like lightning bolts went off for me because my home congregation in Washington, and someone else can remember the different types, but they had Pastor Centric came in. No, that's not their name, but like the pastors were used to, they came from a branch that was the pastor led, and the congregation was a Norwegian. The council had all the power.
Mm.
And those two just, the church, and I am, because I'm raised from there, it's their congregation. I'm serving. And I think it works best when it's blended. But the pastor before me was very much his way, in a loving way. But there was trust, so that's why it was allowed. It wasn't. And Joshua, what was your question? But yeah, that's an interesting one. Like, I am not that. So getting them to speak up more and being like, no, you can push back.
Right.
I'm just talking out loud here, people.
Right.
I have no idea what I'm doing. Yeah.
Right. And it seems to... Go ahead, Jer. Go.
Yeah, I think there is a perception, though, that the council is the boss of the pastor. And the way that I like to explain it to my congregation is the highest governing authority in our congregation is the gathered community at the annual meeting, basically. But we can call special meetings, right? That's the highest authority in the church. And they vote me in as the pastor. And part of that job is to be voted onto the board as the pastor of the congregational council. Likewise, every person on the council is voted in by the congregation at an annual or specially called meeting. So together, we are both voted onto the board and we sit as equals on the board. And I am one voice amongst the council. And so therefore, when it comes to evaluations, we do that together. We have mutual goals that we agree on. We have, you know, and the council has goals too. Mm-hmm. So it's not just like I have a goal as in Word and Sacrament Ministry, but I have the goals to do these things. Well, the council has goals to do their things as well. And then we evaluate the ministry of the church.
Mm.
My ministry, the council's ministry, together, and see, and that becomes then more about pushing us more towards doing well than it does become a punitive thing where we're evaluating the missteps of the pastor.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's a really good way of looking at it. Cause I see it as two, like we're two equals, you know, and, you know, and I like the way you're putting it is we're one of many voices on the council. You know, it's like this collaborative thing, right? So for the council to think that they're the boss, that's not the case. We're all called into this thing together, right? And, you know, I do have evaluations. Well, I don't think I had one this year, but since I started here in 2016, I had evaluations. And every council president did it a little bit differently.
Hmm.
And there were some things that I liked, and there were some things I did not like. And when I didn't like it, I said, no, we're not going to do that again, you know? And I don't mind saying this, like, there was one time this one council president was like, give your pastor, you know, 1 out of 5 stars, like that as a quick reference guide. And I said, no, we're not going to do that. You know, we need like comments. We need to, you know, like I vocally was like, no, this is not okay. I don't like this at all.
So when we did it, when we started evaluation at Good Shepherd, it was very much from some unhappy people who wanted to be punitive towards me.
Mm.
And it became that, right? But we told the congregation we'd do a review. So we felt like we had to go through with it. But it was very clear what was going on. And then everybody on the council that year agreed that they did not like this.
Mm.
That they did not like what was happening. And so we decided for the next year that we're going to make it better. And so for that, for the first one was kind of a rush job. And then for the first year, we took the Constitution and all of the jobs of the pastor in the Constitution, and that was the evaluation. And now we're into the second year of this when I have actual goals that they wanted me to do. And what I do is I take all those goals, because there's like five of them, and I put those into my monthly reports. And so it's a running list of what I've done that month to accomplish that, to help with that goal. And there's been a couple of goals that I haven't touched. And the council's like, okay, obviously there's some friction with this goal. What's going on with it? And then we have a really good conversation about why I'm avoiding that goal, you know? But it's become this really healthy thing of us making each other, iron sharpens iron, of making us better, not like, Pastor, you're not doing your goal. You know, it's not like that at all, but it's a, hey, we want to see this goal met. How do we do this together? How can we help you accomplish it? It's been really beautiful in the last couple of years.
Jeremy, you're a great, you're just, and Josh, you are too, but like, it's fun hearing Jeremy, because I don't, you know, him as well. I mean, now, okay. So this is how I do it, which, if you didn't know, my church is just not Orthodox in any way. There's this one parishioner, the only parishioner who might watch this too. And I adore her. This would not work if I didn't adore her. Okay. And I think that, I think she's pretty much right on everything. And we, every twice a year, maybe three times a year, I call her up for coffee. And because she's involved in lots of different things. So it's like, oh, let's get together and talk about the education hour. But what happens is we have a 3-hour coffee where we are really not talking much about, unlike other coffees where I like learn about personal care stuff. No, she's pretty tight-lipped. There's a couple things about her kids. And she, it's pretty much kind of a review. No, but not like, like, here's the goals that you need to do and the church needs to do going forward. Again, this would not, and she's not on council, work with any other parishioner, maybe the council president, but, and it wouldn't have worked the first year, but I'm now, we started doing this like year three in, and this is what it's kind of become, but I find it so helpful. Again, it's unorthodox, but I'm grateful for her insight and like, oh yeah, you're right, I do. And then she'll be like, how is that property committee coming? And I'm like, oh, I kind of feel like we don't have a boss. And sometimes it's really helpful to have just someone who's, I guess that could be the council. But that's not the, as I mentioned before, we have a very pastor-led congregation. So that's not, the council is a little shy to act that way. But this woman kind of, and the council president a little bit too, like kind of keeps me in line.
You know, what's really beautiful about that is that there are like people in our congregations who have this kind of soft power, right? They, yes. I would assume that this person you have coffee with, she has pretty good influence in the congregation.
She does.
You know? And so they're like, some people hold power, even though they're not on council, they just have power and everybody knows it. You know, and it's good to identify those people, and hopefully they're kind and lovely, like you said, right? You know,
kind and lovely, and they love church,
and they love the church, and it's you know, it's not just some former person who wants to hold power over you, right? Like, like they do it because they love the church, and they're able to speak in such ways that you can listen to them and not feel like you're being judged or whatever, right?
No, because it's collaborative still,
right? I love that. I love those people. I love those people.
So let's change lanes then, and let's talk about what do you do when at like a council meeting. So let's say you're in a council meeting and a council member comes and says, I've heard that there are people who are unhappy with you, Holly, because you're not visiting enough. Mm-hmm. What do you do with that information?
I feel like we're now in a job interview. This would be a very good question.
For a job interview?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. I think we would have a conference. So this hasn't happened, which is surprising, but it has happened to enough. Like, I'm not all about I've heard. So I don't know if I'd want to have that conversation in front of everyone in council, but I would want to be like, okay, so who are these people? Not because I want to chew them out, but it sounds like they're hurting and they probably want me to visit. So I need a little bit more information. So I probably do it in a delicate way, going where we would talk about it in council probably. But you how would, am I doing visiting, all that, and then go, can I talk to you, can I call, and I'd probably say in council, like, can I call you tomorrow and talk more about this?
And that is why you are a good pastor, Holly. You are intuitive in because I was hoping you would say something like that. And the first thing is that you have to find out who has the complaints. Like, anonymous complaints, I believe, are of the devil. Like,
they're not helpful. And what, right.
And what Brené Brown calls the invisible army, like, all of these people without names attached have this problem, right? And we need names.
Yeah, and is it one person or is it 10 people? And
or is it the person talking
who
is saying that it's one or two people and they assume that others are on their side when it's just that, like, that's why the invisible army doesn't work.
Right. Yeah, I think that it's so I think you're both totally right about this. You know, we got to find out who's complaining, and because people should attach their names to stuff, right? Like, to be community together, to be the body of Christ, if we have problems with each other, you know, Matthew, what is it, 18? It's like, hey, go to that person, right? Like, you know, and there should be a mechanism that we trust each other enough that if we have an issue, we should be able to tell people we have issues, right? And if it's roundabout and triangulating, that's not helpful. That's not helpful to anybody, right? And I think if people want their genuine complaints to be heard, they have to attach their names to it. To say, like, I own that this is a problem, that I feel like this is a problem. And so that we can do the best job as a community of faith to say, okay, how do we as the body of Christ address real issues? But if it's anonymous, then it's easy to lob grenades, right? It's easy to just, like, go, hey, the church is shrinking. I think it's the pastor's fault, but don't tell anyone I said this. Hand grenade, you know? Like, that doesn't make any sense. That doesn't make any sense to do Christian community that way, right?
Or the amount of times where, this isn't all the way the anxious feeling, but the amount of times, like, I don't know if someone's in the hospital or I don't know if someone's diagnosis, like, you got to tell me. Yeah. And you got to tell me how you want me to slightly respond to.
Yeah. So I think that for our listeners, like, if you're on a church council, don't receive any anonymous complaints. If there is somebody who gives you a complaint and you're on church council, you have to tell them that you're going to attach your name to it or it dies with you, right? And a person's uncomfortableness with attaching their name to a complaint isn't enough grounds for the name to be left out. Unless there is serious allegations. But we're talking about, like, normal unhappiness stuff, right?
Right.
If there's, like, serious of, like, we have to protect sometimes victims, right?
Right.
Like, we have to protect them.
So,
yeah.
But that's not, like, this is just general church unhappiness. Go ahead.
And I think a lot of times the complaints have more to do with, again, the changing in the world around us, because we know what's going on. We read the news, we feel it, we hear it. But also, you know, just the change in the pastor style from the last pastor, the change in beloved programs that can't no longer function.
Right.
It shouldn't. And so it's just like the change gets put on you and you're like, well, gotta, that wasn't working.
Right.
We're doing something different now.
Do you guys have mutual ministry committees? No. Jeremy, do you have one?
I blew up.
You used to have one, but you don't anymore.
I used to, and we're trying to do it again, but I made a mistake in my mutual ministry committee by appointing the wrong person and then speaking too freely. And they were not able to deal with how freely I spoke.
Yeah.
And so that was a learning thing on my end. I spoke too freely. I should have been more guarded in the way that I spoke.
And ideally, a mutual ministry committee is a place where you could speak a little bit, maybe more.
Yeah, for sure. More freely. Probably not as freely as I talk, though. You know? Yeah, I own that. I absolutely own that.
But that's, I mean, it's also like at the bottom of the whole, like, the list of things. But that has been my conundrum about them is, how do you build one where it's not your closest parishioners? Mm-hmm. So that people outside don't feel like it's Pastor Holly's friends, which is, I don't have friends at church. But, you know, so you can get other representation, but still be able to share? Like, I'm always a little bit guarded too.
Well, I think we should be.
As you should be.
I think we should be.
You should be. Like I learned.
So our mutual mentor community, we just go out for beers. You know, we've gone out, last time we just went out for beers together and we just kind of talk like, okay, like, do you need any support, Pastor? Is anything going, anything you feel like you can't talk about the council with? Like that's usually how it goes, you know, for my mutual ministry.
Totally can see that with you.
No, it's just, and so it just feels like, it feels like a line of support, you know. I haven't had, you know, and it is an ear to the ground. Like, okay, what are you hearing from parishioners? You know, not in the sense of anonymous complaints, but kind of like, what are people talking about? You know, and is there anything that I need to know about that's not making its way back to me? You know, because sometimes it is making its way back to me, you know. And if it, with a mutual ministry committee, I will, if there's conflict with members or uneasiness or something, I'll let the mutual ministry committee know. So at least one other person knows, hey, this person is in conflict with me, or I'm in conflict with this person. So that it's like, if it gets around, at least one, like a couple people know about it and they know what's, what and why, you know, the, what's going on. I think that's also a healthy thing with mutual ministry committees. You know, I'll tell the president too, usually, what's kind of, hey, this is happening, you know, and it's not alliance building. I'm not trying to build up alliances. I'm just trying to communicate. So this way, if there's gossip, people know. Yeah. No.
How did you pick the people who were on it? Or how were the people who were on it picked?
I try to choose people that I have a good relationship with, that I feel that we can speak candidly to each other and have, you know, who I think are really good listeners too. Who can hold information, hold tension. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how I feel about it. But it's definitely not a place for anonymous complaints. Mm-mm. If so, I, you know, if my committee has not done this with me, but if they said, hey, we're hearing, I'd be like, nope, you know, especially if it was with me.
Yeah. So let's bring it back around again. As pastors, how do you help your congregations with anxiety, with the anxiety of where the church is?
I think for me, I just feel like I name it. I say, this is happening. We have to watch out for these pitfalls when it's happening. And I've actually told the congregation, you know, in some places, what happens is all that anxiety is put on the pastor. You know, and they become the scapegoat, you know. We cast all of our anxieties and our sins on the pastor and we send them out and I said, we have to really watch for that, you know, and to have honest conversations, because it's not just going to be the pastor who turns around a congregation. It's a community who turns it around, you know. So I just try to have those honest conversations, and I've been saying it for years with them, you know. That we have to watch out for these things, you know? So what about you, Holly? Your thoughts?
You know, we read as a council, I made them read a book called Autopsy of a Deceased Church.
Yeah. Yeah. The Rainer book, but right?
And then, like, you know, it had the little questions at the end. Do I think that the council ever read the chapters beforehand? Two people did. And a couple people were like, why are we reading this? One person was like, this isn't very detailed. I'm like, no, because I want you to read it and you're already not doing that. But I had to, each time we'd go over two chapters and we'd talk about it. And I'd be like, we're not dying, but these are good questions. We need to talk about this, because leaders to watch out for the pitfalls and just name it.
Yeah.
And so we had some really good conversations, you know. If they read the chapters, it might be a little bit better, but they didn't need to. And for them to just also think, but that's it. To be non-anxious about this subject.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I went with my counsel through a book called I Refuse to Lead a Dying Church, which Holly, if you're looking for another book to do, I highly recommend that down. This book.
Get the updated one, the post-COVID one.
Yeah, get the post-COVID one.
Yeah.
Okay. I refuse to lead a dying church. And then the way that I got them to read it, or at least it to be in their mind, every Monday morning, Holly, I would read the chapter, and then I would send them a question about that chapter. For the 3 or 4 weeks in between council meetings, they would get a question a week that chapter. And so it was always in front of them. If I had a, because I think in images sometimes, if I had an image in my head, it would be, do you remember the very first scene in the Pirates of the Caribbean where Jack Sparrow is proudly on the mast of his ship as the ship is going down, and then he steps off onto the dock, right? But the, you know, and that is kind of what I think our church, like, rather than have anxiety and all of this kind of stuff where we're trying to do nonsensical things to try to save the church, right? Our council is now like Jack Sparrow. Like, we are going to proudly step into the new thing and not have anxiety about the old thing. And it's brought us life. And it's shown us that the church isn't sinking. It's transforming into a new thing. And all of the principles in that book, just as we were going through it over the year, I could see them change parts of my council members and talk about, like, we don't talk about dying anymore. Because we talk about life. We talk about, it's like life over death, community over isolation, fun over drudgery. And these are all choices that the church has to make. And I forget the rest. But those are the ones that come to mind immediately. So I help them with that. But I also, I help the council with that. But as a whole, I'm always trying to give the bigger picture of the church. And if you've been around me in my congregation long enough talking about these things, you will have heard me said, like, all of the churches that Paul planted are now museums, right? Does that mean that his churches failed? No, they had a lifespan, you know, and that's okay. And while I'm planning for 30 years in the future, 40 years in the future, right now for my congregation, I'm really aware it may not happen, but I'm planning for it because I think that God is at work here and God will do something here. And so it's always giving them that bigger picture and hope. And giving them hope.
All right. I feel like we've been going for a while now. Thanks, everybody, for this great conversation.
Yeah, thanks. I'm going to go back to that email I was working on before I got...
Before we brought you in on this.
Stay on, okay, Holly?
Yeah.
This has been the Serrano Brothers Podcast. Thanks for joining us.
Goodbye.